Great. Thanks for being here, Don, and agreeing to share your story with me today.
Okay.
Just to get started, could you tell me how you first got involved with the gay community or started engaging in gay life?
I was living in Port Coburn, Ontario. I was known as gay since I was in kindergarten. Mm-hmm. Just always known as gay. Or different. I didn't know I was gay, but, you know. And eventually, people started asking, why isn't Don interested in girls and what have you? So I went out with a girl for a year, and that wasn't working. And I knew I was gay, so after I kind of burst out of the closet and moved across the country. I'm gay, I'm leaving, bye. When I moved here, somebody that I met back east was just visiting. He used to live back there, but he had moved here. So he had arranged for an apartment for me. And it was in Stackafags, 1150 Burnaby Street. My first job was...
Stackafags?
Oh, you've never heard of that?
Maybe I have.
It's 1150 Burnaby Street. It's like primarily all gay. And I come from a small town, like there was no gay scene at all. And my first job was in celebrities. Bang, I was in it. That's how I got involved.
Yeah, that's quite the dramatic transition.
Yeah, from a town of like 15,000 to a community of 15,000.
What was the community like in those early years?
I was just amazed when I first got here. It's like, oh my god, I couldn't believe it. It was a lot more concentrated in the West End because of security type things. There were people getting beaten up, and there's still a lot of homosexuality wasn't quite as accepted.
So there was like, I guess, a lot of animosity towards the gay community back then.
The testosterone filled rednecks coming in on the weekends and just looking for somebody to beat up, and I think that's why we're like nowadays there's gays all the lower mainland more or less. Back then, we stayed in the West End. My business had Commercial Drive, and we had the West End, and that was pretty much it. Mm-hmm. There wasn't many out and about. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. What was it like? It was sad, because people were dying. They were visibly dying all over the place. Used to pick up the West Ender? I think it was the West Ender. It opened right up to the Proud Live section every week. And see who had died. And Dr. Peter was doing his special. So every week we see him progress. And it was really sad because there was a lot of stigma going with it back then. Reagan had banned entry to the U.S. with anyone with HIV. And it wasn't until Obama's second term that got lifted, right? I know. I had a job that kept sending me down there. And it's like I kept telling them, it's like, I could get turned back just so you know, that was in Tennessee.
Wow.
Yeah. What was it like? Well, I'll start with a little bit with me back in Ontario first.
Sure.
A dysfunctional family. I was smoking pack a day in the house at 13. I was my mom's drinking partner at 15. I was just like, it was a really dysfunctional household. Just a mess. I won $150,000 on Lotto 649 at 20. I put myself through college for a couple of years. I was working night cleanup at a meat processing plant at the time. Like I said, I had experimented with a couple of guys in high school and what have you, but I hadn't been in a relationship or anything. I fell in with this wrong group of people that let me be gay with them if I get them high on coke. And I got introduced to coke. So in the first 2 years, I did great. And then last year, once I got into coke, I ended up leaving Ontario like $80,000 in debt. Because once you've got money, they keep giving you credit cards. I kind of fled debtors and just left. I moved here. I moved into 1150 Burnaby Street. My first job was in Celebrities. And while I was at Celebrities one night, working, somebody had broken into my apartment, stole everything I owned, like right down to the pillowcases off my bed and everything. So basically, when I came here, and it cost me, I shipped all my stuff out, and I had a lot of good stuff. I was one of the few people that had a computer back in those days. And it was all gone. Like, I had no insurance or anything, and no one saw a thing. So basically, I was starting from scratch. It cost me basically everything I had to move out here. Well, and everything I could muster up in credit to move out here. So, and come up with rent and what have you. Celebrities at the time was like 54, basically. Cocaine was going through that place by the shovelful every night. So I maintained that coke issue for a little while. I met the first guy I ever dated. Seriously, he had fallen into the garbage can, a 45-gallon garbage can one night at Celebrities, ass first, and he was stuck in it and he couldn't get out. So I got him out of there and then I dated him. I could pick him. And it turned out he was positive. He knew he was positive and he infected me and he never warned me or anything. The first guy I ever really dated infected me. So basically I've been positive my entire gay or sexual adult life. More than half my life now. I'm 53 and I've been positive 31 years.
Wow.
Where to go? I saw that he was getting sick. He never admitted it to me, but I saw him getting sick. I'd moved to Surrey by this point. I'd moved in with him in Surrey. And there's two reasons for that. Number one, I couldn't afford here, working on a busboy's salary from Celebrities. And number two, I was really afraid that I was going to pick up a West End effeminate swish and have to go home one day and be all effeminate and just be an embarrassment to my family and what have you. I was just horrified about that. So I moved to Surrey, and that was a mistake. It didn't take me long to go. I did move across this country to be in Surrey. I moved in with him, and I saw him getting sick. I could tell he was starting to get sick. Like, you saw people all the time getting sick. You see, you know, their partners pushing them around as they got sicker and sicker and sicker. Mm-hmm. And then you see they died, and then a couple months later, you see the partner died, and it was just like, they'd go one after the other like that. People that were sick were very visibly sick. They were Kaposi's and wasting and, you know, frail and, you know, they were very sick, sickly. So we both went and got tested at VGH. I made him go get tested. He didn't want to. And we got the dates to get our results. We went in at the same time, we got our test done at the same time, but on the results they made a mistake on my date to get my results, and they put the day after I was supposed to go. So he got his results the day before I did. We were supposed to get them at the same time. And he tested positive, so I kind of knew I was positive the day before. So I went in, and sure enough I was positive. And you kind of go into shock. You just keep going. It's like, you know, I'm 23 years old and positive. It's like, you know, and I'm coming from a small town. There was no gay. AIDS was only something you heard about on TV, right? At VGH, the woman that broke it to us was very nice, very sweet. But basically, it's like, you've got AIDS. Here's a cassette tape. Off you go. And that was that. We got like a cassette tape. I never listened to it. It just seemed ridiculous. There was no offer for support or anything. And I got referred to Richard Taylor, who was one of the HIV. There was only like three or four HIV doctors back then. Mm-hmm. So I got assigned to Richard Taylor, who initially was great. Over the years, I ended up having some problems with him, but initially he was fine.
And when you were diagnosed, the doctor at that point said, you know, get your affairs in order? Or
yeah, basically. But BGH didn't say anything. They referred me to Richard. So it took me like 3 months to get in there. They said, you kind of go in shock. And it's like, regardless of this news and like how devastating it is. You still got to pay your rent. You still got to pay your, you know, you just got to keep going. It's like, and you do go into shock. You just go through the motions of every day, but you're not really processing anything. You know, you're just going through the motions. It slowly sinks in. I'd say probably about 6 months before I kind of snapped out of it. Because, yeah, and when I did get in to see Richard, I was basically told, yeah, I have 1 to 3 years to get my affairs in order. It was kind of hinted that I'd be luckier if it was 1 year than three, because people were suffering. Like, when you died, you suffered. You didn't go gracefully. Back then, there was kind of an underground thing where a lot of patients got a lot of morphine backed up. Certain doctors would just write them prescriptions for morphine, and that way they had an out when they needed to. So over the years, I kind of amassed a bunch of morphine as people died, but I've gotten rid of that. Yeah, it was a different time. People were dropping dead all over the place. And yeah, I lost a lot of people. Yeah, so I don't know. I moved back down to Vancouver after a year in Surrey. I still, the guy that infected me, I was friends with him for like 10 years. I didn't know anybody else. On top of that, on top of testing positive and getting my whole place ripped off and starting from scratch, my mom died like 6 months after I got here, and we were really close. And I didn't get to make it back to see her before she went. So that was hard too. So I was looking at that period in my life and say, if I can make it through that, I can make it through anything. You know, it doesn't kill you, makes it stronger, sort of thing. I've been very lucky. I worked for 17 years. I've always worked. I've never collected an EI check. I've collected one welfare check while I was waiting for my EI to kick in, but by the time that was supposed to kick in, I had another job. So I've always worked. I worked for 17, almost 18 years before I ended up going on disability. So,
wow.
I didn't let it get to me. Having lost my mom had suffered from cancer for 7 years. She had a double mastectomy. I come from a long line of very heavy smokers. So she never let on that it was a problem. She never complained to anybody. She's just a good attitude through the whole thing. And she never complained. She never let on to anybody. So I always wanted to be the same. Like, I took her as a role model and I was going to be the same. So that's what I did. It's like I didn't let it bother me. I didn't let it run my life. It was just a part of my life. But I wasn't going to let it be the entire focus on my life. The meds back in those days were horrible. They were very strong. We were severely overdosed because they didn't know dosages or anything. And at one point, it was either 3TC or D4T, one of the two, because I was on both at once. And everyone was doing this. You'd walk around and you'd just crap your pants. Like, no notice, nothing. You just start crapping your pants. And it's like, I made a choice. Like, I'm not going to live the last of my days like this. So I just went off my meds. I've done that a few times over the years, and I get shit for it. They don't like it, but you know what? I know when I need to take a break. I could tell when I was, because, yeah, we were really overdosed at times. There was points I was turning yellow. Like, you know, my eyes were yellow, my skin was yellow. It's like, I got to go off these meds for a while. And I did. It's like, and I found that I could go off for a few years at a time before my numbers would start to go into danger zone again. Mm-hmm. I respond very well to meds, but I've never taken the full dose that they prescribe. I do now because they now prescribe a reasonable amount, but they always had this double dose, at least. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We used to take like 8 ritonavir a day, now we take 1.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I was dating a guy that was 28, I was 33, and he died. And, We used to have this cat. This cat hated me. We'd be sitting there watching a movie on the couch or something. This cat would just sneak up behind me and swat me in the back of the head, and I'd be bleeding all over the place. And she just hated me. So when he died, she hated everybody. It wasn't just me. So when he died, I knew if I didn't take her, she'd be put down. And I couldn't bear to think of that. I took her home, and I just gave her space. I kept her, let her clean her food, and I knew what kind of food she ate and all that. And I just, it's your place to do whatever you want. And you know, I didn't force myself on her or anything. I just gave her the run of the place. And for 2 weeks, she didn't talk to me at all. She just kind of walked by me and hissed or looked and just walked by me. And then one morning, I woke up and she was like a puppy. She just couldn't get close enough to me, and she's just I had her for another 13 years. Mm-hmm. And losing her was probably harder than losing any person, because she was with me for a long time and through a lot of people. Mm. And she represented Craig, so. I don't know. Ask questions.
Sure. No, I mean, you've answered a lot of them already, but were you hearing about HIV when you were living in Ontario?
On the news, you hear about it. Liberace died, and everyone knew it was him. Rock Hudson. Like I said, we weren't... Reagan had banned us from entry to the U.S. It was basically... Yeah, it was for... For gays, hookers, and drug addicts, basically. And so if you had HIV, you were deemed dirty. And even to this day, you still get that. I'm clean. People refer to themselves as being clean. Mm-hmm. So.
Mm-hmm. How were you responding to some of that early information? How did it make you feel?
I kept myself quite self-medicated for a lot of years. A lot of people did. I don't advocate this, but I somehow think that probably kept me alive for some reason, just because it raises your metabolism, your whole system, right? I drank like a fish. I didn't have a vegetable for years. It's I didn't take care of myself at all. I did everything wrong. I did everything I wasn't supposed to do, and I just kept going. There were points where I was... I've never committed suicide, or never attempted suicide, but there were times I went off my meds because I just didn't have it in me to fight anymore. Because it can be a straight uphill climb all the time, and it's just the loss is unrelenting. It's it doesn't stop. It still doesn't. Even plagues don't last this long. They're usually done in 10 years. And this has gone on 30, over 30 already, so... And yeah, people are still dying. They're attributing it to different things now, but they're still dying due to medication and disease. Mm-hmm. That makes me very sad that nowadays it is being touted as just it's nothing. It's it's easily treatable. I don't know, but it just doesn't seem to have the same... Because it's not visible, you don't see people being sick anymore. We used to see them all over the place. Carposi, people are just covered in carposis all the time. You don't see that anymore. You don't see people wasting anymore. So I think people think it's nothing anymore, but I know damn well these pills are so hard on the organs. I'd just broken my back and I couldn't take painkillers because my liver and kidneys were already taxed from my HIV meds. I couldn't add painkillers on top of that because they're processed through there too. Yeah, it's been hard. Doctors have egos, unfortunately. When I ended up getting hospitalized the first time, when I went on disability, I had PCV pneumonia, which is what used to kill everyone. Mm-hmm. And my doctor, I saw Julio Montana for the first time, and I didn't care for him at all. He was very rude, and just I felt totally like a lab rat with him. But my doctor seemed to have a little jealousy issue with me seeing him, and I kind of got stuck in the middle of this weird, I didn't know what to say. It's he just had this little jealous fit. And it's but because I needed him to fill out my paperwork for my disability and what have you, it became clear who I had to side with and who I had to walk away from, but it was just kind of awkward there for a while.
I mean, how has
Doubt Speech can't tend to, they don't think, they think we're stupid if you don't have, like, letters behind your name. They think you don't know anything. And, you know, I try to tell them stuff. I've got a good doctor now. I've got a very good doctor now. I like her. But I wasn't impressed with, I was at the beginning, but you know, he didn't really listen to me. He said when I told him I wanted to try Zyban to quit smoking, he went, that's not going to be what kills you. Just a few things like that. Like, just I complained to him about depression a couple of times, and he told me, "Well, if you can't pick up a self-help book, what am I supposed to do?" It's like, okay. So yeah, there's generally I find the care here excellent.
Mm-hmm.
Those are exceptions, not the rule. But there's been a few times that I just got really discouraged. I haven't always adhered to my medication regimen the way they want you to, but I've always been honest about it because I knew we were part of study groups. So I always sat there and listened to them denigrate me and berate me and treat me like a kindergartner, like when I'd sit there and do my interviews with a pharmacist and what have you, and threaten to cut me out pills and everything. It's like, I'm being honest. It's like, you know, a lot of people weren't taking their pills but going in and lying just so they didn't have to sit there and take their shit. But I knew these were important. We were part of studies, so we're part of human trials. So I understood that. So I sat there and ate it for years. Like, it was just, you know, I'm being honest with you. Like, stop yelling at me. And I know. And don't tell me one more time how important it is, because I've heard it. I've been hearing it for 30 years. Yeah.
So that seems kind of like a mixed bag of experiences in terms of the medical system and HIV.
About 10 years ago now, I had a bunch of disappointing things happen to me. My doctor, Richard Taylor, kind of let me go because I wasn't following his instructions. So he just kind of dismissed me after, like, me being his patient for like 25 years. So it's like, okay, fine. And then I was volunteering at PWA, and we went on one of our retreats, and this can't go on the report. This can't go public.
Should I turn this off for a second? And we'll turn it back on momentarily.
Okay. Yeah.
Is that okay?
It just can't go on the web.
Sure. Give me one second. Yep. I'll just stop this.